I'm sitting here with Bit from the Monochrome set.
Hello.
What an honor. Thanks for coming to my show. Yeah, your real name is an Indian name, so I don't know to spell to
Indian.
Pronounce it. Indian name.
Yeah, Ganesh.
Ganesh.
Seshadri.
Seshadri. So yeah. Your parents are from India? Or
my mother's American.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they immigrated to England?
Yeah.
Some decades ago.
Yeah, long time ago.
Long time ago. Okay. Yeah, now you're sitting here in Freiburg. Is it your first gig in Freiburg, by the way?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I had another band as well. We never came.
Okay.
This far now.
And tonight at the Great Rinktinktink.
Yeah.
The pub. Yeah, it's a really nice one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the Monochrome set since 1978.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
A long time ago. It's
yeah.
37 years more
that's
than
right.
I'm on Earth. Yeah, I've never heard of you, so that's quite strange, because I've read that you're
influence. Yeah, we didn't really. We have certain countries where we have a history with, obviously, in the UK and in France, because we were on Virgin, and Virgin were very big in France at the time, so we could, and in Italy and in America and Japan. But we only ever played, you know, in the first 15 years of our existence. I think we only ever played Germany 3 times or something. So we don't really have the same history.
Mm.
Yeah, but we're building it now.
Okay, hopefully.
Hopefully.
You're really a big star in Japan, I've read. I mean, that's, yeah.
Well,
that's
we
not surprising because Japanese guys or people...
Well, they actually bought... Well, there are certain people that are big in Japan, and sometimes you don't understand. Lili Lovitch, you know, is big in Japan. And bigger in Japan than she was. And when you say big in Japan, there's nothing comparable to Japanese bands. So Japanese bands are massive in Japan. And
okay.
when Americans and Europeans say they're big in Japan, you know, you only get to... We got to number 43 in the charts, which is huge. But above us, they're all Japanese.
So, oh, really?
So we were the biggest non-Japanese
band. Such a large music scene there.
Well, obviously, because they you know... It's their own language, and they, you know, they speak to their own people in their own language. So the foreign language, you could never get that high, you know.
But maybe that's why there's this song "Big in Japan." That now you've said it, "Big in Japan." I had to think of this hit.
Yeah, there is that thing. It's I suppose to Europeans.
Was it Ultraville or what band?
I don't know.
Some 80s stuff.
Yeah, horrible 80s stuff. But it's like it's very serious that, you know, that it's a territory, you know, which you can be big in.
Mm. Mm. Eine Symphonie des Grauens. Mm. It's a German title. Why that? Was it kind of hip to speak German that time?
No, not really. It's when I was young, I used to watch a lot of pre-war movies and German movies, Murnau and Fritz Lang and things like that.
Mm.
So I know the original Nosferatu. This is the subtitle of the original Nosferatu film. So I just used it. I liked it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I know that that time there was a big, the arc and industrial new wave music scene in Berlin, for example.
Yeah.
So that would, yeah.
Well, we played the SO36 in Berlin. But it wasn't really our...
SO36, okay.
Yeah. Sort of famous old club in
what
Berlin.
Year?
That would be in 1979, we played there. But it wasn't... Berlin audience wasn't really our audience. They weren't so much into guitar new wave, mm. I don't think. It was very industrial dance music, almost.
Yeah.
Very different to the rest of Germany, really, at that time. So, you know, it's not that particularly... That title isn't particularly associated with the scene, particularly because it's just experimental, not experimental music, but experimental words. So you just use anything that sounded interesting.
Eine Symphonie des Grauens, it's a love song, nevertheless, or is it
ironic
love song?
I'm not too sure what the song is about. I sometimes write songs and I don't know what they mean.
But the lyrics are, or the words you use,
I don't know
the term love.
But I don't know what the song means.
Okay, you don't know what the term love does mean.
No, I'm honest. You know, I suppose a lot of people who are songwriters or artists or painters say this means this means that. I don't know sometimes what the thing means. I just do it, you know, so.
Do you come from punk music originally?
No, not at all. At the time,
emancipated from that.
People say, they say punk and post-punk, but I remember, my memories, which may be different to others, that everything started at the same time. There wasn't anything called post-punk. Mm. New wave started at the same time as punk. People don't use the term new wave anymore, but we did then. And for me, punk was part of the new wave, not the other way around. It was a new wave of ideas and music, and really the only difference in punk is that it was slightly more violent, and people wore torn up clothes and things in their ears and things like that. But even the Damned at the time were classed as new wave because they weren't as extreme. So for me, it was just experimental. Everyone was experimenting. And as soon as you had the genre, the experimentation stopped.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you could say that's punk, then it's no longer experimental.
But when did you say this is post-punk or this is new wave?
Well, but we used the term new wave in the sort of 76, 77. And, you know, for me, Adam and the Ants weren't punk, they were new wave. You know, they weren't really a punk band because at that time punk bands were much more extreme, and they didn't do extreme music, and we didn't do extreme music, and we did it at the same time as punk bands, so we didn't come after them. We just were a different way of escaping mid-70s heavy sort of rock, adult orientated rock, which all the kids wanted to escape, prog rock and Yes and the Eagles and things like that. And you want to do your own immediate thing which was more relevant to a younger generation.
I would say your music is quite the opposite of punk in some senses, because it's quite clean, it's sophisticated, it's ironic, it's...
I think if there's anything like that in it, it's because
we were
completely cut off from what was going on around us. We weren't interested really in what other bands were doing. We just did our own thing, whatever we thought was good, and then that would be it. That's what we were doing. So we weren't trying to be political, and we weren't trying to be sociological or anything like that. We just did what we thought was a kind of like an art studio, you know, for us. It was just going into rehearsal rooms and just writing things which we thought were good.
So no intentions, just...
No intentions to be part of a group at all, no. And we never felt as if we were part of any scene or anything like that. We've always sort of felt cut off from everyone else. It doesn't bother me that if they say people are influenced by us, I don't know if that's nice or not. I don't kind of think about it. I don't care. Almost. I mean, maybe it's nice, but I don't really care. Mm. We just carry on doing it. Because I think once you start caring, then it influences what you do. And I don't want to be influenced in what I do, but what I think other people will think of it, you see.
Yeah, that's funny, because in every article about you, there's this example that you influenced such important bands.
I think that the only possible, and so on. They say a lot of that, and I think
is this true?
Well, I mean, I know Alex from Franz Ferdinand because I produced his album before he started Franz Ferdinand. He had a previous band, and I produced that. So, I think, be quiet.
12 o'clock, tea time.
I'll start that again so you can edit it.
Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah, I know Alex Huntley, as I know him, not Capranos. And he had a band called The Blizzard. So I know that there's been influence, but I don't see... I want to be careful because I don't want to ride on that, because these people that are influenced by me, who might be influenced by me, are very talented songwriters. So I don't want to downgrade their talent by saying they got it from me. It's not true at all. I think that they may have been influenced by me in the fact that I have a kind of... It's possible that the Monochrome Set has a kind of individualistic purity, that we go for certain things without reference. We have a lot of musical references in the music, but we don't sound as if we're part of any particular genre. And we just go and do things and try things out. And it's possible that other people are inspired by certain things we do, because we're always kind of experimenting in subtle ways or obvious ways in certain things, if you see what I mean. Even in little technical details of what we do, and once you stop, once you become part of a genre and you become successful and you start just doing the same thing to make the money that made you the big first single or whatever, or you're settled in a particular genre like Susie and the Banshees, you keep producing the same kind of music, then you're no longer influential, because everyone knows you, and you're all you're doing is influencing yourself.
Mm.
You're just redoing what you've done.
Maybe it's important to, not to be famous, to stay.
I don't really know. I just think
to stay independent.
I mean, I'm not saying that I'm any good. I'm not saying that I'm any good, but I rather see myself more as in the same mentality or the same approach as, for example, a late 19th century French painter who would just experiment and change as he went along, you know. Oh, I think I'll try this. They're always, you can tell that's a go-go, and you can tell, but there's like experimentation throughout their career as to what they were going to do. And I don't think it's necessarily to do with it. It's just the artistic impulse that you want to do something new. You don't want to be too influenced by showbiz and success and that.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah. It's a kind of pressure if you're in focus.
Yeah, exactly, I think. Yeah, but I don't think I would have been pressured like that anyway. Mm. I wouldn't know, because I've never made millions. But I'd like to think not.
Now your record number 12, Spaces Everywhere. It's on the label Tapete Records. Mm-hmm. It's a German one from Hamburg.
Yeah.
How did you come in touch with
Because the last tour last year, we were in Hamburg, and these two guys came up to me and said,
Was it
Carsten and Gunther, and they just came up to me and said, you know, hi, we're run a record label, we'd like to sign you up. And I'm like, who are these two people? I don't know who you are. And then later on, someone told me, oh, they're a big record company. So I said, and then we did the deal. It's that easy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been going really well. We just sort of understand each other really well, because they have their own band as well, you know. So they're very band orientated.
Die Liga der gewöhnlichen Gentlemen. I had them here in the studio weeks ago. Yeah, and he told me of you.
Yeah.
But you had a long relationship, kind of relationship to Cherry Lab Records. So why did you leave Cherry Lab, or they leave you?
When we got back together again, since the 90s, we were on Cherry Red on one record in the 80s, and then four records in the 90s. They had too many bands, too many re-releases. They got a huge catalogue of things, and it makes it less easy for them to concentrate on bands and promotion and things. They've become a slightly different kind of company. I know The Fall have signed to Cherry Red, and they put their records out with Cherry Red, but we didn't want to do that. We were the last two records have been on our own label, so we just started our own label, and they did fairly well. And then, you know, we would have put this out on our own label, but it's better to be with Tapete.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, Spaces Everywhere. There are different meanings of spaces, are there? So what?
Are there?
Well, it's for really me, it's the translation program gave me, I don't know, 20 different meanings. So I cannot really translate this Spaces Everywhere.
If you didn't understand the language, you'd think it was a very happy poppy album, but as was typical of the Monochrome set, it's not really. There's nothing particularly negative about it, but Spaces Everywhere is about the spaces people leave behind after they die.
Okay.
See, that's where that seat is, where your uncle used to sit, and you can remember his gestures. And or when you pick up a plate or a fork, you suddenly remember that someone used it in a certain gesture, but they're not there anymore to pick the fork up. See, that's what Spaces Everywhere means. And it becomes, the older you live, the more you encounter the spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So
people are dying around, friends, family members.
Yeah, and it's really what Fantasy Creatures is also about that.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy Creatures recently, because for some reason, people in showbiz seem to all die when they get to 70. So recently, a lot of people from the 60s have been dying. A lot of the drummer from here, or the keyboard player from here, or the singer from here and there. And all these big stars are dying. And so it's like the sky is going dark with these stars burning out. And there's kind of, to me, it's not that younger people aren't as talented, but there's not so many stars, younger stars, replacing people like that, you know. When Joni Mitchell dies, which might be in the next 3 or 4 years, there's not another Joni Mitchell, you see what I mean, to replace that. So it's strange. I mean, the big movie stars died maybe 20 years ago, but the pop stars and the folk stars and the rocks, you see what I mean?
There's still some left.
There's still some left, but they're kind of all dying right now. And when they die out, they just... Lou Reed died, you know, just last year.
Yeah.
And there's not another Lou Reed, you see. And I nearly died four years ago.
That's a philosophical matter of fact that there's no other Lou Reed. But do you think that good rock music will die out?
I mean, yeah, I kind of do, because I don't think that there's not the mechanism for people to become big. When I was young, within the first 2 or 3 gigs of doing the Monochrome set, we had a hardcore following of 50. For now, it would take a band 2 years. 50 is nothing, but it might take a band 2 years to get a hardcore following of 50. And the first record, He's Frank, it sold, 5,000 in the first week? And now, for a single to sell 5,000, it would be in the top 10. And it would, you know, it was, people went out, they really bought records. It was, I don't think people understand now the huge difference between record sales now in the late 70s. It's massive and the amount of fans that would then follow you around, from, which we still get in the UK. We get British fans travelling to Germany. Tonight, no, but...
To Hamburg.
I mean, we had a couple of British fans following us to America and also to Tokyo. And because it's the old school British fans, they're used to it. You know, it's like a football team.
They will die out as well.
Yeah, they'll die out.
There will be a lot of space.
That's why we're in Freiburg. Some fresh blood.
New one. Okay.
But it's yeah. So there isn't really the mechanism for it. Everything has changed. You don't have the weekly papers anymore, which provide a forum for people to go to see what records have come out, who the new up and coming interesting people are. Because the internet's fantastic, but where do you go on the internet to find out who the interesting people are? You don't have it anymore. You have mass communication, but it's very difficult to communicate. Damn it. So it's difficult for young, talented people to get anywhere. And also, in the 70s, virtually every band that I knew went to art college, were paid to go to art college, plus they lived in squats in London. So they lived for free, they were paid to live for free, they were all in bands. So it was kind of a, they could do what they want. And that's where all the bands came from, that's the music. Now they get into debt, like in America, to go to college. And so nobody does art anymore. They do dentistry or something. So it's completely different.
Yeah, but still there's a big difference between Germany and England, for example, because in England the music scene or the musicians are so much supported, I think, or much more than here in Germany.
Maybe. There's no actual financial support.
Music plays another role in England. Your lyrics, I mean, I couldn't read them because they are not online, I guess. But yeah, you're said to be very ironic and you have always this black humour in the lyrics. And are you ever serious?
Yes,
of course, the music sounds quite funny, but I'm sure it's not always
funny. Well, there's a triple. The first time you hear them, it sounds a lot of fun. And then underneath it, there's a dark side. And then just underneath that, there's a humorous side again. British literature is full of black humour. But black humour in much more of a slightly caustic way than, say, Spanish black humour or French black humour, you know. But it is really, I write poetry, you know.
It has also a lot of witness between the lines and aphorisms.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's I know a lot of people, very intelligent people, who don't understand the lyrics. What I've just written, I have to explain every mm-hmm. word. This is what it means. But if it was a piece of poetry and they read it, mm-hmm. and they did it at school, then they would understand what it means. But it doesn't really matter to me because it works. It works whether you understand it or not, and people make their own meanings from it, so I don't mind. So it doesn't really matter. I mean, eventually, maybe someone will, that's what it's about. So, but, it, you know, so I do something that maybe a lot of other people don't do. So that's something, you know. If you want something different, you go to me.
So it's your kind to express yourself via the lyrics?
Yeah, I'm just like a little coffee shop that sells strange cakes. Mm-hmm. So if you want a strange cake, you'll come to me.
Okay.
But if you just want an ordinary croissant, then you'll just go to...
So I'll find a strange line in your songs. For example, this line about the sea dog. I mean, it's in the song Z-Train?
Which I did, yeah.
Yes.
You know...
What does the sea dog stand for? I mean, is it just a metaphor?
No. It's a very, very, very standard...
It's just a sea dog?
No, it's a standard English expression just meaning old sailor.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
sea dog means just an old...
I'm lost in translation.
Salty sea dog is a really, like, just an old sailor.
Okay, I thought of the animal.
The last verse, it's all about people sleeping on train, on coming back from work.
Mm-hmm.
Because I came back one day from a gig and I saw a load of people actually sleeping while they were on the train. And there was a guy snoring and whistling a little bit like a whale. And there was a screeching, which sounded like penguins or seagulls. So I was just thinking the other people might have been dreaming about being at sea
mm-hmm.
while they were asleep, and that's what it's all about.
Okay.
Yeah. See, he's dreaming as if he is at the seaside because he can just hear all these whistles and screeches.
Mm. Maybe there's one political message in your texts on the record, An Avenue, maybe. So it's said to be about gentrification in some way.
Yeah, a little bit. That's not really a political message. Well, Iceman is actually about electioneering. The whole song is about, not about politics, but electioneering. It's about...
Yeah, I meant political, about politics, but you have a kind of message or critique.
Not really. I mean, Avenue is just about things changing.
Okay.
You know?
Observation?
Yeah, but I mean, it's just like going down streets and they're not being the same. Mm. When people go back to the street where they were born or they lived for a while, and which is just a human thing to do, but it's all completely different. And that's the way it is, you know. Shops closing, changing. You know, where all the places that I used to buy my guitars when I was young, they're now, you know, they sell coriander and, you know, that sort of thing, or they sell other whatever. So it's not the same anymore. Culture is different.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it would be kind of critique.
It's not a critique, it's just an observation, really.
Phenomenon.
No, I don't really, I'm not critical of change.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sort of observant of it mm-hmm. and just, you know. So, you know, the observation would be that no matter how much older people think they understand young people, the environment is just actually different from when the older people were there. So they'll never understand young people. Because literally the environment down the high street is different. And all those little things influenced you to be the way you were, the way the shops were, the kind of shops they used to be, influences people when they grow up. The tiny things which people don't understand influences them, their own character. See, that's all.
That's so sophisticated. Okay, yeah, a bit. Thank you so much for this conversation.
It's a pleasure. And
have fun tonight. I'll be there, I guess.
Okay, great.